Thank you very much, Tony, for that welcome. And can I thank CEDA very much for inviting me to present today. It's very good to be back at the CEDA Forum. It's a very important policy discussion forum, and I appreciate being here. It's also very good to be back in Melbourne. I spent probably a dozen years just on the other side of the Treasury Gardens there, looking out and thinking deeply about things such as the cost of capital and Alan Stockdale and Jeff Kennett's aspirations for a very large sale value for their businesses and what my decisions on the cost of capital would do to that. I then retreated to the peace and harmony of Sydney and New South Wales and the ANC. Today, as has been said, I want to talk about the interactions between climate change policy and the energy market frameworks and the capacity of the energy markets to adapt and accommodate the challenges of climate change policy and still remain efficient and reliable during the transition process. The two policies you're well aware of are the Carbon Pollution Reduction Scheme and the Expanded Renewable Energy Target. They'll involve very major transformations and adjustments to the energy market. And as was said in the introduction, the energy markets have already gone through very major change and adjustment since the changes of 1998, when the NEM was first established. Are there stress points? Is the market resilient to manage these changes, or do we need to make adjustments to the framework? That's the question we've been asked, and that's what I'll talk about today. I mentioned here that I'll focus on the eastern and southern national energy market, electricity market, and not focus on gas, although it's a very important part of the adjustments. And I won't talk about Western Australia or the Northern Territory, although they too are part of the review that we've been asked to do. Now, I've got some contextual remarks that I'll make just to put the context within which these adjustments need to take place. I'll be very quick in that context. I have also handed in to CEDA a background paper, a quite comprehensive discussion of how the energy market currently works and how it's likely to respond to some of these challenges. And that background paper, together with my PowerPoint presentation, will be circulated by CEDA and will be on our website as well. So you might refer to the background paper for detail, and I won't go through it in a lot of detail. First of all, just a few quick comments on the AEMC. We're a national body established under law, and our responsibility is rulemaking for the national electricity and gas market. So under law, we set the framework of rules within which the energy markets operate and the network sectors are regulated, and soon the framework within which retail competition and consumer protection occurs. A very important role we have is to actually conduct reviews under references given to us by the Ministerial Council on Energy on aspects of the energy market and policy or rule or regulation changes which might improve the operation of the market. And the review that we are currently doing on the impact of climate change policy on the market frameworks and the performance of the market is one such important review. It's ongoing. We've put out a first interim report in December, which is out for comment. We'll put out a second interim report in June, and our final recommendations, including any implementation plan for changes to law and rules, will go to ministers in September 2009. So that's who we are. Let me also then talk about the key findings so far. These are preliminary findings. This is what we've said in our interim report. First of all, we've said the current energy market design, for electricity in particular, has many strengths, and there are many things to be positive about and optimistic about, and we should not lose sight of that as we look at areas where there might be useful change. The current framework has delivered reliability over the last 10 years at the standard required by the market arrangements. It has also delivered cost-efficient services at prices which are internationally competitive, admittedly reinforced by the very low cost but high carbon intensive coal generation that we rely on. The market design is internationally respected. I've just come back from a trip to the United States where I was struck at the heavily regulated approach to the energy market that you see in the United States. Here, we rely on disaggregated decision-making and activity by market participants within a framework of incentives. That's the basic model we have for our energy market and for our regulation of networks, and it has been working. However, we have identified some areas of concern, and these are our preliminary findings. We may be persuaded to extend these areas, or we may be persuaded that the way we're treating these areas needs some further and deeper thought. But retail price regulation and the dealing with the retail markets is an area where we think there are some concerns. There could be some risks, and there could be some obstructions to the market's ability to adjust to the changes that will be put in train. Transmission connections for large-scale remote renewables. There are many incentives now for strong investment in renewable generation, and particularly wind. They're likely to be located quite distant from the current network. Have we got the right framework to encourage timely investment in those network connections? And by the way, are we going to see changes in the flow of power and more congestion in the network, and are our signals for managing congestion strong enough? And lastly, short-term reliability management. We believe the signals coming out of the energy market are resilient and strong for medium to long-term management of investment and maintenance of reliability. That is, enough generation to continue to meet demand in the market. But in the short term, in the context of a very tight supply-demand situation and likely holding back of investment, pending clarity of climate change policy and other matters, there's likely to be a shorter-term challenge to maintain reliability in the next 3 to 5 years. So they're the three areas that we've identified where we need to look very closely and look at whether there might be opportunities and a need for change. If I can just go on to a few contextual remarks. As was said in the introduction, we are now approaching the third phase of major reform. The pre-reform phase, our market was basically isolated in state-based, vertically integrated electricity providers. The major reforms of the 1990s, we all know about, restructuring and a move, importantly, towards interconnection of the market and towards national regulation. And then the COAG and MCE work program since December 2003 has headed towards the establishment of national institutions to oversight the operation of the market, the AEMC, the AER, and NEMCO, soon to transition into the AEMO, and national laws and rule frameworks within which the market will operate. So that was a very important further phase of reform which is ongoing, and now this question of are we equal to the challenges and pressures of climate change policy, and do we need to push further into reforming the framework? So that's where we've come from, that's where we are. I won't go through this in any particular detail. It's simply to say we have a highly competitive wholesale market with very strong price signals in the spot market and in the contract market through swaps and caps to signal the value of energy and the value of capacity and the need for investment. We also have a very effective regulatory framework for networks, which relies on incentive regulation under price and revenue caps for the businesses to make the investments and to find the cost savings and to deliver the reliability. So my main proposition here is that market model up to date has worked extremely well. Reliability has been maintained. Investments have been made to match the growth in demand, and prices and costs have been efficient. We have seen significant investment brought forward in the generation sector and the network sector under this market model. Retail competition is progressively developing. It's very strong in Victoria and South Australia. It is developing in other jurisdictions, and the experience in Victoria and South Australia demonstrates that a truly competitive model can promote the interests of customers, can keep prices reflective of efficient costs and can deliver for the market. So my proposition here is we have a very sound electricity market framework and it's working. However, we do face some challenges. We are seeing rapid growth in peak demand, particularly in the southern parts of Australia, but in general. We have seen recently drought constraining the energy delivery capacity of the generation capacity we have in place. There are evident requirements for new investment and replacement investment in both network and generation. We have very tight supply-demand conditions, partly to do with the efficiency of the market itself, with just-in-time delivery of investment, but also, as I mentioned, some evidence that investment has been held back in recent times, waiting for greater clarity on policy, including climate change policy, clarity on government ownership questions, clarity on price regulation questions. We have a financial crisis, a credit crisis on us, which is raising the cost of credit and debt and is restricting its supply. That is not an energy market design question. We can't change the energy market framework to deal with that question, but it is a real risk overhanging the market. And lastly, the subject of today's presentation, if I can just get on with it, is climate change policy. So let's go to that. First of all, very quickly, and I'm not pretending to be an expert in these areas, how does climate change policy work? First of all, looking at carbon pollution reduction scheme. The overall objective is to put a price on carbon to encourage transition to technologies, services and consumption behaviours focused on low emission technologies. There will be a requirement to purchase permits for the large emitters to justify the emissions that they have. The quantum of those permits will be focused on the target for emission reduction the government has. Treasury modelling, although there's commentary in the press questioning this, suggests the opening price with the government's lower trajectory will be about $23 per tonne. That's lower than had been earlier expected, but nevertheless a very significant impact on wholesale energy prices nevertheless. I make the point that these are long-term policy instruments directed to achieving emission reduction over 2050 and longer term period. What we're looking at here is what will be the short-term and medium-term impact on the energy market and can it transition. The impact on the energy market, large changes in the economics of electricity generation. There is different carbon intensity amongst the generators currently in the market. Coal, particularly brown coal, being very carbon intensive, gas less so, and we're seeing now renewable technologies, wind, solar, geothermal, that are very low emission. So there'll be very, very significant changes in the structure of generation that comes into the market in response to these price signals. We'll see wholesale prices rising significantly to accommodate the carbon cost, and that will imply passing through that carbon price and those wholesale prices to final customers to keep the upstream supply industry viable, but also to give a signal to users, industry and households, to modify their consumption behaviour. We'll also see significant changes in the location of generation. Currently built largely around the availability of coal resources, we'll now see it moving to availability of gas or gas pipeline resource or to remotely located renewables. So big changes in the network demand and in the location and nature of generation. Going to the ERET, again, there'll be an obligation on retailers to obtain given proportions of their sales from renewable sources. Basically, this will impose or provide an incentive for stronger investment in renewables than otherwise would have been the case. There'll be a subsidy, in effect, to renewable investment, generation investment, as a result of this scheme. We believe the bankability of REC certificates will give a very strong incentive for early investment in wind generation, and that generation is likely to be remotely located, as I have said. It also raises the point that wind generation is variable. It will only be available when the wind is blowing, implying a need for peak generation that is more certain to back up wind generation when the wind isn't blowing. So there are quite significant challenges which will come out of the EREP as well. I now want to just go through and talk as quickly as I can. How am I going for time? Okay, I think I can do it. I'll speak more quickly. I want to talk about three issues. The impact on generation and how well the generation sector is likely to respond. The impact on transmission and how well and effectively the transmission sector is likely to respond. And lastly, consumption behaviour and the retail sector and how is that going to work. So again, going to the generation sector, I won't go through it in great detail, but I believe we have a very sound structure to our wholesale market, which provides strong price signals, spot market price signals, and contract price signals for bringing forward the right level of investment, and it has performed. It's an energy-only market. We do not pay capacity for being available. It's a capped energy-only market. We currently have a cap of $10,000 on the upper limit of spot prices in the wholesale market. The AEMC currently has before it a proposal to raise the value of vol to $12,500, and we also have a proposal before us for a rule change to allow flexibly the reliability panel to recommend as necessary further changes in vol to give the right level of signal for the right level of investment to come into the market. So those arrangements in a wholesale market, together with the intervention mechanisms that are available to NEMCO, the ability to reserve trade if there is insufficient reserves, and also to direct, and finally to load shed, we think they are a resilient set of mechanisms that should see the market through. There may be comments and questions on that, and I recognise we had very serious load shedding 2 weeks ago here in Victoria, and I'm happy to talk about those events in relation to this general conclusion that we have a sound framework for the market. But what are the risks? And as I said earlier, we think the risks at the moment are transitioning to the medium and long term, that the signals are there, the market can perform, but we have very tight supply demand at the moment and some holding back in investment. And even when investment decisions are now made to go forward in response to vol or a possibly higher level of vol, there will be a lag of at least 2 to 3 years before new investment can actually be brought on stream. So we think there is a short-term reliability risk which will need to be recognised, and we may need to look at the systems that are currently in the market for managing shorter-term reliability risks. That goes to NEMCO's reserve trading arrangements. Are they sufficiently flexible? It goes to how the reliability standard is translated into minimum reserve requirements and triggering for the RERT. It raises a question of whether we need to look at other mechanisms, such as a standing reserve that might be available and paid to be available in case of events of a reliability stress. So those issues are part of the area that we will examine further. Let's look at networks. Again, as I've said, the network framework, and I don't doubt in questions people will raise the process of adjusting the weighted average cost of capital as an issue that they'd like to talk about. But in general, I want to say that the framework of price regulation or revenue regulation with incentives for cost efficiency and reliable delivery of service, the ability of the regular reviews to look at capital requirements for augmentation and replacement is a resilient framework. The framework is able to deal with the investment requirements. In addition, I mentioned on this slide there have been reforms to the National Transmission Planning arrangements. NEMCO, soon to be AEMO, will have within it a National Transmission Planner, which will take a 20-year perspective against different scenarios for supply, demand, development or policy change as to what the investment requirements of the national interconnected grid are. So there's a long-term planning framework to inform decision-making. The AEMC has just made recommendations to the MCE regarding more consistent national transmission planning standards rather than the mishmash of different planning standards that currently applies across the country. So here are areas of reform and existing framework where we can be fairly positive that we've got a tested framework which is working. Some may disagree with that, but that's the preliminary view we have. The issue that we've identified, there are actually two, but the main issue we've identified is with the change in location of generation being brought into the market by climate change policy, particularly remote wind, solar and geothermal, is the network framework for connection of those long distance generators adequate to the task? And we think it's not. At the moment, it's done by bilateral negotiations by individual generators with the transmission business. We think, particularly if there are likely to be clusters of wind generators in particularly effective wind resources, Eyre Peninsula, northwest Tasmania, etc., there may be a need to build larger lines to accommodate future connection than is warranted by the first one or two that want to connect. How will the system deal with that? Who finances the larger investment, which is not yet fully warranted by the generation that's committed? How do we share the risk of stranding of any investments of that sort? We think that's an area which does need to be further examined. I note that it was also an area, I think, that Gano raised as a potential area where the market might not perform. So in the network sector, we think that's the main area for consideration. Transforming electricity consumption. We do want to see changed behaviour. We do want to give price signals to users in industry and the household sector that reflect and understand the cost of carbon. That does require the passing through to customers of the price signals of this cost. At the moment, we have quite competitive retail markets, as I said, in South Australia and Victoria. Victoria, following a recommendation of the AEMC, has now deregulated its household sector in terms of price regulation. The remainder of jurisdictions in the market continue to regulate prices for small customers. We think the arrangements are not going to be flexible enough, timely enough, to recognise and pass through the costs of carbon, and there may be two consequences of that. First of all, it may impose significant pressure on some retailers if they are not recovering the wholesale cost that they are incurring in their recovery from customers. And secondly, it's going to mean that customers are not seeing the cost-reflective signals which will encourage them to change their behaviour. So we think this question of retail price regulation and more flexible and appropriate mechanisms to pass through the cost and to do it in a timely way is going to be an important area for review. I also mentioned that the retailer of last resort arrangements in the various jurisdictions, these are the arrangements for transferring customers of a failing or failed retailer to other retailers and recovering the costs of their supply from the new retailer, have certain weaknesses to them, and they may not adequately deal with a retailer failure should we get to that. So there are areas in the consumption area to deal with. And that takes me through my presentation. Just some closing remarks. To bring that together, we think from what we've seen so far, the energy market design has strengths and it's likely to be resilient to changes and to give the signals that are required to change behaviour and to bring on board investments. But we shouldn't lose sight, as I say here, of the magnitude of the change that's going to be imposed and the transition that's going to be required as a result of climate change policy. Our preliminary findings, though, as I say, it's resilient. We've identified some areas for review and possible change of the frameworks. These are preliminary views. It's out for consultation. We can be persuaded that we've missed something or that we are not seeing the issues as we should see them, but these are our current thoughts. So let me leave it there and perhaps await talking with you in the question time. Thanks for listening to me.